with this idea of evil companions corrupt. And that, of course, comes from the scripture in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. I got sidetracked. This verse, as we have it here on the screen, is from the English Standard Version. And it's a very reliable translation where they've gone back and corrected a lot of the mistakes. It's still not perfect, no translation is, but it's a very good one. But it's also very easy for the young people, for the children, to be able to read. Now, you don't have to memorize it from this. If you want to use the King James or you want to use the American Standard of 1901, be my guest. We're not going to grade you, judge you based on which translation you use. But we chose this one, we talked about this one because for the young people, for the children, it's easier for them to remember. Still going to be teaching the same things, regardless of the specific wording. Because, as you know, the King James would read a little differently than this, but the same idea. I think, for example, the King James uses the word manners and at the end. And instead of company, it talks about communications, which is companionship. And then instead of ruins, it says corrupts. But those are all synonyms. They're all similar words that have the same kind of meaning with them. So this is our scripture. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. You ever seen that happen? Happens all the time, doesn't it? You know some good kids who went bad. You know some good adults who got caught up in something because of their companionship, and they turned to the dark side. They turned evil. They did things that you never imagined that they would have done. We all know people who, because of their associations with worldly people, left the church, left their faith, left it behind. I've heard several stories about people in our community, here in the Corinth area, who did just that. They were good, faithful, solid people. Some of them were preachers, missionaries, elders, leaders in congregations, but they got sidetracked. And it's easy for it to happen to us. And that's why that Paul tells us here in Corinthians and tells all of the Christians throughout the ages, don't be deceived by this. Don't think that you can hang out with evil people and it won't affect you. Don't be tricked. In the context, of course, of this chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 as a whole, is talking about the resurrection. He starts that chapter talking about the gospel, talking about the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. And then he starts talking about, goes into our resurrection ultimately at the end of time, as we face Judgment Day. And so in that context of the whole chapter, he then says, you watch out for this. Beware of this. Don't be tricked by this, because the devil is constantly trying to trick us, isn't he? He's always trying to deceive us in some way. And this is one of those ways that he tries to deceive us, tries to trick us. And so one of the things that was happening in the church in Corinth was that there were those who were being deceived into believing that the resurrection had already happened and they'd missed it, or that there wasn't going to be a resurrection. Either way, the thing about it is the devil likes to find all sorts of ways to trick different people. He'll throw 100 different things out there, and he only has to get one of them to work on you. He doesn't have to get all 100 to work on you. You know, that's the thing. You know, God has a much more difficult job than Satan does. Because God has to get us to do what is right. The one thing that is right, God has to get us to do that. Satan, he doesn't necessarily have to get us to do one thing. He can just get us to do anything else that's not the one thing that God wants us to do. So that makes it a lot harder for God to win this battle for our souls. Because it's easy for the devil to just find one little place where our defenses are weak. One little chink in our armor where his arrow can get through and pierce us. Just a little bit is all he needs. Now, of course, the idea then here that Paul is warning about is not to associate closely with those who hold to error and false teaching. Now, specifically, again, he's talking about error in regards to the resurrection. Do you know that we still have to this day people in the church who are teaching the idea that the resurrection is already past and we missed it? It's called the theory of AD 70. That basically it all happened in AD 70 when Jerusalem was destroyed. That was it. And that was all there was to it, and we've missed it. And there was a fellow by the name of Max King who was big on promoting that theory. It's still out there. I just heard it within the last month from someone. It's still out there. The thing that Paul warned, don't be deceived by this. There's going to be a resurrection. We're going to be raised from the dead. And there's people still to this day who are denying that Bible fact. It's hard to believe, isn't it? And yet if we associate and become friends with and listen to this kind of error, eventually we might be swayed by it. If there's one thing that I've learned, Xander was watching last night. He got me watching some of them sometimes too. There's these different people on YouTube have different videos, and some of the videos they talk about their theories about various movies and books and things like that. So they may have theories about certain Disney princesses or about, you know, Harry Potter or about Superman or what Batman or whatever. They've got all their theories that aren't really things that were covered in the books or the movie or whatever, but they've got a theory about it. And they present their information in such a way that their theory can sound pretty good. If you doubt that, sometime go watch one of the videos of the people, and there's a group of these folks as well who believe that 9/11 was an inside job, that President Bush did it. He did it on purpose. He had that building destroyed for whatever reason. They have different reasons. They think he wanted us to go to war with Iraq or whatever, you know, whatever their reasons are. But they will present it in such a way that it sounds plausible. There's just enough facts in there mixed in with the conspiracy to make it sound kind of appealing. And false teachers in the church and religion do the same thing. They mix in just enough true facts, just enough Bible verses here and there scattered in, and then they throw their poison in with the mix. And it doesn't take a lot sometimes. You remember the first false prophet, if you will, that there ever was? You remember that serpent in the Garden of Eden? And you remember that serpent only did one little thing, just added one little tiny three-letter word to what God had said. God said, "In the day you eat of that tree, you shall surely die." And all the serpent did was said, "You shall not surely die." All he did, add just that little three-letter word. It's not much, is it? But that's the way false teaching works. And that's the way evil companions, bad company, that's the way it works to ruin us, to corrupt us. Our companions do influence us. You will find when you're around people that you begin to talk like they do. I grew up in Colorado. And if you've ever heard anyone from Colorado talk, you know I don't talk like somebody from Colorado. But I grew up there and I talked like they talked when I was living out there. But then I moved to Mississippi and then I moved to Alabama and then to Louisiana and then back to Mississippi. And I've been down here in the Southeast so long, I don't talk like somebody from Colorado anymore. And my family from Colorado comes and meets me and they, "Wow, you sound Southern." Well, I probably do. But I didn't always. I was influenced by the way the people around me talked. And you'll find if somebody from here goes out there to Colorado or Nebraska or South Dakota or somewhere and stays out there for 20 or 30 years, they will start to talk like the people out there. Now, interestingly enough, I was born in Texas, and when we first moved to Colorado, they called me the shake and bake kid. You remember the shake and bake kid? I helped. You know, that was me when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I had that southern accent, but then I lost it in Colorado. And then I got it back. But we have this kind of chameleon type effect when we're around people. We become kind of like them. They become kind of like us. We use the same phrases. We say the same kinds of things. We do the same kinds of things. We like the same kinds of things with the people that we're around. Now, most of the time, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Unless, of course, we're mixed up in some bad company. Now, that's one thing they tell any alcoholic or drug addict when they're getting clean, is when you get out of this rehab, you've got to change your friends. You've got to change the people that you're around, because chances are the people they were around were the people that got them addicted to drugs and alcohol. So they've got to get around some different people, or they will fall right back into it. The ones that can successfully get new friends can often overcome that addiction. But the people that go back home and go back to their same old friends usually fall right back into it. Our companions, our friends, do influence us. We need to not be deceived about that. In fact, it would be difficult to exaggerate the degree to which we are influenced by those we influence, Eric Hoffer says. You know, sometimes we see how we're affecting somebody else. We may not see how they're affecting us. We may not notice it. We're thinking, well, I'm influencing them for the good. Maybe so. But beware. They may also be influencing you for the bad. And we have to beware of that. So in examining this verse, do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Well, first, of course, you got to have some good morals before they could get ruined. If you were already bad to start with, maybe you're the bad company that's ruining somebody else's morals. But hopefully, we had those morals in the first place. But let's learn this. Do not be deceived warns us of the potential for deception. I have heard people, they'll say things like, well, that doesn't affect me. I'm not affected by that. We've studied in our Wednesday night class a couple of weeks. I guess we kind of finished it up this past Wednesday night. We talked about influence. And we talked about how we are influenced by things. It is amazing to me, absolutely amazing to me, the changes that take place in people and in society as a whole. 20 years ago, well, yeah, it's 15 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. Sure, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, candidate Barack Obama ran as for president with the idea that there should not be same-sex marriage. That may surprise you. You may not have realized that. At that time, for him to promote same-sex marriage would have probably cost him the election. So he said, oh no, I don't believe in same-sex marriage. None of the candidates running that year did. They all thought it was, oh no, we're okay with them having their civil unions, but no, marriage is between a man and a woman. All of the presidential candidates felt that way in 2008, less than 10 years ago. Well, of course, we know how that's changed. The majority of the people, somewhere around 65% to 70%, said, no, there should not be same-sex marriage at that time. Even California. We know, we've all heard about California, even if we've never been there. Even California, that year, in that election, passed, they call it a proposition out there, we would call it like an amendment to our state constitution, but they voted, the people of the state voted to outlaw same-sex marriage and to define marriage as between a man and a woman. That was in California 10 years ago. So you can imagine how the rest of the country felt about it. Let's fast forward 9 years to 2017. Now, the majority of people think same-sex marriage is okay. What happened? Well, those good morals were ruined. They were corrupted. In another 10 years, they may make it a law that you have to be in a same-sex marriage. I don't know. No telling where we're going in this country. But we've got to be careful that we don't think that we can't be influenced. Oh, well, no, I'd never. I'm in the same place now that I was and that I've always been. Be careful. Chances are you've drifted further than you think you have. Now, it may be that we've grown and that we've learned and that we've matured and that we are going in the right direction. And that's good if we are. But beware, because you may be deceived. You may be tricked into thinking, you may be thinking because, well, society is so much worse than me, but you may not realize that you've drifted as well. It can happen to us. And so we need to be aware of that. In New Testament days, people were the primary corruptors. You know, nowadays, of course, we have books and magazines, pictures, there's movies and TV and the internet and music and all these other things that can corrupt us and ruin our good morals. But back in the New Testament time, primarily it was people. They may have had some writings, but mostly it was people. So we need to realize that we're facing some things that they didn't face. Parents, of course, need to be aware of the potential corruption of their children. Sometimes we think as adults that because we see something and, well, it doesn't really affect me, and that doesn't, you know, I realize that's wrong. What we may not realize is children won't realize that. Children seeing that same thing, especially if it's something they see multiple times, they'll be much more easily affected because children are forming their morals and their beliefs while they're young. So be careful with what they are exposed to, especially. But of course, we need to, as adults, realize also that we can be deceived about bad company corrupting us. We need to beware the people that we hang around with. Dave Ramsey says that you think about who your closest five friends are, your closest five associates, and he said, generally speaking, and this is in the area of finance, he's a money guy, he said, generally speaking, the five people that you associate with the most, that are your closest friends, you'll find that your income and their income is generally about the same. So he said, you know, he's talking about money. He said, you know, if you want to get richer, start hanging out with wealthier people. Now, that doesn't just by itself make you wealthier. I mean, you know, we're not talking about being a servant for Bill Gates or something that's going. But if you, that's his idea. You get, the same thing is true with morals. We want to be better people. Start hanging out with better people. Now, of course, then, you know, they're going to be concerned about us dragging them down, aren't they? Because it certainly is easier to have that effect. We want to notice also, as we look at this verse, that the phrase ruins or corrupts, that wording there, indicates that a state of purity had existed before. There was good that was then corrupted. You can't corrupt something that's already corrupt. You can only corrupt something if it's good. You can only ruin something if it was first unruined. So this is not talking about just somebody that went from bad to worse. This is talking about somebody who was good, who had good morals, who had pure motives, who was living a godly life, who believed and taught and practiced the right things. 2 Corinthians 6, 14-16 teaches us we should not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. You know, a yoke of oxen can only go one direction. Horses that are joined together to pull a wagon or a car, they can only go one direction. Can you imagine a car with two steering wheels? If you ever took driver's ed, you can imagine that. But if you think about the kind of idea of two steering wheels, two sets of gas and brake pedals, and that'd be chaos unless those two people were going together. So you got a situation where when we get joined together with an unbeliever, we're either going to be going the same direction with them, or we're going to be constantly pulling against each other, and we're not going to get anything accomplished one way or the other. And that's why God warns us about the dangers of that and what a problem that is. 2 Corinthians 6, 17 and 18 teaches us we must come out from among them. And we need to be sure that we're doing that as well. Now, of course, that doesn't mean we cloister ourselves off in a monastery somewhere away from everybody else where only righteous people are and nobody ever sins. First of all, that'd be impossible because everyone sins. We must still have contact with unbelievers. John 17, 15 teaches us that. He says, I pray not that thou should take them out of the world, but that thou should keep them from the evil one. So even Jesus knew. He didn't want us to be taken out of the world just that we'd be protected from the evil. And knowing is half the battle there. If we know that there's evil around us, we know we can be influenced by us, then we can avoid being deceived by that. 1 Corinthians 5, 9 and 10 also talks about this. It says, I wrote to you in an epistle not to keep company with fornicators, yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or with idolaters, for then you must needs go out of the world. So he's saying, yes, you're going to, in your daily life, when you go to the store, when you go to a restaurant, when you go to work or whatever, you're going to run into people who are wicked, evil people. God's not going to remove you from that. In fact, He wants us to be there to be salt and light and to influence them. But we need to beware. Now, I know even of some, as we mentioned earlier, who were preachers, gospel preachers, faithful to the Word, but because of their association with a denominational preacher, they began to talk with that denominational preacher and listen to that denominational preacher and read that denominational preacher's suggestions for reading material and just immerse themselves in that teaching and wound up falling headlong for it. Now, that's not to say that we don't ever look at those teachings to compare them to the Scriptures. We should. But we need to do it cautiously, understanding that the Scriptures are our guide and that those things are written by men who can be deceived and can be wrong. The fourth thing that we want to pay attention to as we consider this verse is that the phrase good morals, or some translations translate it good manners or good habits, the good things that we do refers to doing what is right. That's what good morals are. And that's what can be destroyed. You know, there are many proverbs that refer to the influence that others have on us. We say things like, birds of a feather flock together. We say, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. We say, he or she is a chip off the old block. Now, those are usually, of course, those two are more with families. We say things like, you can't soar with the eagles if you live with the chickens. We say things like, he who lies down with dogs rises up with fleas. We say things like, you can't rise with the rooster if you stay up with the owls. Now, some of these things, you know, may not necessarily be right or wrong things, but it is true that the people that we hang out with tend to influence us. Now, any of these really could be good things or bad. You know, birds of a feather flock together, that could be a good thing if they're good birds, but it's a bad thing if they're bad birds. We need to think about how we are affected by these things. We also want to realize it's easier to be pulled down than it is to pull others up. 1 Corinthians 10:12, wherefore let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he falls. I love to illustrate this one. I'd love to illustrate it, but we're running out of time. One of my favorite things to do is to get a young, strapping young man, healthy young fella. Maybe I could get Clay or even I could get Xander or somebody, and I'd get them to come stand up on the pew. And then I'd get somebody, a small little lady. Maybe I'd get Clay and Molly to do something like that together, where she would stand on the floor and he'd be up on the bench. And he'd be trying to pull her up on the bench. Now, if she wants to come up on the bench with him and helps him, he can do that, can't he? He can pull her up there and she'll help and she'll kind of push off and climb up there with him. But if she doesn't want to go, if she wants to pull him down, he's trying to pull her up and she's trying to pull him down off there, who do you think's going to win? And I could do it with Xander and Hannah or Kazia. Because and of course, we've got gravity helping here, right? But it illustrates the point that it is easier for a smaller person to pull that stronger, larger person down off there than it is for that, even though they're bigger and stronger, for them to pull that other person up if that other person isn't cooperating. Now that tells us something. If we have friends that are out there in the world that want to do what's right, then we can help them. But if they don't want to do what's right, if they are going to try to pull us down, we better let go. Or they will. They'll be able to pull us down easier than it'd be possible for us to pull them up. That doesn't mean we abandon people. It just means we recognize you can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. They talk about the same thing with a drowning victim. They say, you've got to be careful. When somebody's drowning, you want to come up from behind them and grab them. Because if you try to come up from in front of them, they'll drown you too, even if you're a good swimmer, if you're not careful. They'll take you under with them. And so you come up from behind them and grab them around where they can't, they can't grab you, and then pull them to shore. But you've got, now, if that's something even where they don't want to drown, they want to be saved, but they just, because of their flailing around, they don't know what they're doing, it's causing problems. Good habits are easily corrupted. Galatians 3:1 and also 2 Peter 3:17 teach us this information as well. Beloved, 2 Peter 3:17 says, Beloved, seeing ye know these things, beware lest you also, being led away with the error of the wicked, fall from your own steadfastness. Beware. It's easy to fall. As we consider this, let's look at our own lives. Let's examine our lives. Let's examine the relationships we have in our lives. Are the people that we're around drawing us closer to God? Are they an encouragement to us? Are we bouncing good ideas off each other? Are we helping lift each other up higher? Helping encourage each other to make it to the finish line and to make it to heaven? Or are the people that we're surrounding ourselves with the kind of people who are going to drag us down and drown us in sin and falsehoods and lies and deceit and all sorts of evil things? If you're not living the right kind of life yourself and maybe influencing others for the bad, you need to straighten that up. You need to do what's right for yourself. And we can help. We don't want to abandon anyone that wants to do what's right. We all know it's a struggle. We've all been there. We've all fallen. We've all had to get up again and try again and fall again and try again and get up again. We've all been there. Don't give up. But beware, don't be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. That's what Paul tells us, and it's so true. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation this morning for any reason, please do so as we stand and as we sing.